From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, October 24th, 2025. Washington County commissioners are urging local voters to support an $8 million bond to solve a budget crisis. Brian Schuth, chair of the County Budget Advisory Committee, told reporters in Machias Thursday that the borrowing is needed to repay debt and keep critical county operations running.
This could have a devastating effect on public safety, as almost three-quarters of the county's expenses go to maintain 911 dispatch, sheriff's patrol, the jail, and emergency management.
The fiscal crisis is being attributed to years of fiscal mismanagement. The referendum question on next month's ballot asks for up to $11 million, but commissioners voted to not take out more than $8 million. The nonprofit service provider Preble Street today celebrated the grand opening of a new 30,000-square-foot food insecurity hub in South Portland. The industrial kitchen can produce up to 2,000 meals a day. The freezer can store up to 50,000 meals. Preble Street's Donna Yellen says those meals could be distributed statewide in an emergency.
Pandemics, natural disasters, these are things that we expect to happen, and we want to make sure everybody in Maine has food for that time.
Yellen says the idea for the food insecurity hub started during the pandemic. The industrial kitchen has the capacity to eventually produce up to 10,000 daily meals, with plans to distribute them more broadly to Good Shepherd Food Bank's network of pantries and other providers. A crowd of people wearing blue and holding signs converged on the Longley Bridge in Lewiston this afternoon for a vigil to remember those affected by the mass shooting 2 years ago that killed 18 people. Richard Morlock is a survivor. He was among a group of deaf friends who were playing cornhole at Schmangi's Bar and Grill on October 25th, 2023, when the shooter entered. His words are voiced by an interpreter.
I'm still sad. I miss four of my favorite deaf friends a lot, and now they're gone.
10 people, including four deaf men, were killed at Schmangi's. 8 others were killed at Just in Time Recreation. Organizers of the vigil say they decided not to do a large public event on October 25th so that people could choose how they wanted to spend the day. Republican Senator Susan Collins says she is talking with colleagues about ways to end the more than three-week-old government shutdown, but she continues to blame Democrats for the political impasse. Collins says she agrees that Congress should act quickly to extend subsidies that help millions of Americans purchase health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, but she says there are disagreements between Democrats and Republicans over whether to reimpose income caps on subsidies that were lifted during the pandemic.
But let's bring their version to the floor. Let's bring our version to the floor. But first, we need to reopen government because the ACA issues are complex, but they do need to be dealt with promptly.
Meanwhile, Democrats are insisting that Republicans agree to extend the subsidies as part of any deal to reopen the government. Without congressional action, many Mainers who purchase insurance through the state's ACA marketplace will likely see their premiums increase significantly when the enrollment period opens on November 1st. The University of Maine system is reporting a slight bump in enrollment this year. That was due primarily to an online program at the University of Maine at Presque Isle, which has grown to over 3,000 students. Sarah Abrons, president of the Universities of Maine Professional Staff Association, says that overall enrollment numbers are slightly lower than predicted, which has made already tight budgets tighter.
I think we did budget, too much of an increase this year, or expect too much of an increase this year. It is always a guess whether or not we're going to meet the enrollment trends.
Despite the overall increase, enrollment declined slightly at the University of Maine at Orono and the University of Southern Maine. The U.S. Attorney for Maine is urging consumers to take advantage of National Drug Takeback Day tomorrow. As Patty White reports, law enforcement agencies around the state will accept medications that are no longer wanted or needed.
The goal of National Drug Takeback Day is to prevent medication from being abused, stolen, or resold. U.S. Attorney for Maine Andrew Benson says in a press release that since the program began in 2010, it safely removed more than 19 million pounds of medication from circulation across the country. Consumers can bring unneeded or expired medications to participating law enforcement agencies between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Saturday. A full list of locations can be found at DEATakeback.com. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
New facilities for Maine's maritime and aerospace industries could bring more than 200 new jobs to the Brunswick area. Both the Maine Maritime Academy and the Maine Space Corporation debuted new facilities to train workers and test products this week. The buildings are located at Brunswick Landing, the former Naval Air Station that now houses more than 150 companies and organizations, mainly in tech and STEM. Heather Hopkins is Director of Industrial Training and Apprenticeships at Maine Maritime Academy.
I really see it as, if you build it, they will come. Our partners are joining us now, the schools are joining us, and it takes coalitions and alliances to build the workforce.
When fully staffed, Johnson said the facility could train hundreds of tradespeople annually. The Maine Space Corporation will use its new lab to test products for multiple industries. The Wabanaki Alliance is encouraging Mainers to vote no on question one this November, which would require voters to show photo ID at the polls. Tribal IDs would not be included as an acceptable form of identification, which Executive Director Molly and Bryant says is discriminatory.
And I think it's a key piece of our tribal sovereignty that we can identify our members and we can sort of carry this with us as we belong to our tribal nation.
Bryant also says proposed changes to absentee voting in question one would disenfranchise elderly and disabled Wabanaki citizens by creating unnecessary barriers. Portland officials are alerting residents that a cruise ship slated to dock in the city this Sunday is dealing with a norovirus outbreak. The U.S. CDC had reported earlier this week that more than 11% of the roughly 600 passengers on the Oceania Insignia were sick. But today, the city of Portland said only 8 passengers were in required isolation. Officials said the U.S. CDC confirmed cruise ship staff are effectively responding, including by quarantining sick passengers, and the agency did not recommend blocking the ship from docking. Norovirus is a highly contagious disease that causes diarrhea and vomiting. Steps to prevent norovirus include washing hands often, as well as washing fruits and vegetables. Washington County commissioners are urging local voters there to support an $8 million bond to solve an emergency budget crisis. Residents say they're shocked at the number and at how the county ended up here in the first place. But county officials say after years of poor accounting practices, it's the only way to pay off the county's debt and keep critical operations running. Caitlin Badion has more.
A steady stream of diners is stopping for lunch at Helen's restaurant in Machias. Owner Julie Barker says there's a lot of talk about Washington County finances and the $8 million bond on the ballot that will be decided in less than 2 weeks.
So I say just try and get it done. I hate to see people have to pay a little extra.
Barker says it's hard to grasp how the budget issue grew to such a problem, but she doesn't see a way out other than the bond.
And the amount still has to be paid regardless, so we're going to be paying for it regardless of if it doesn't pass.
She's not the only one who feels that way. Other area residents and county officials agree it's a bad situation, but the bond seems the only responsible solution. But some residents say they won't vote for the bond and shouldn't be responsible for fixing the county's accounting mess. And at a press conference with county officials Thursday, some residents questioned why the public wasn't informed of the problem sooner.
At first, people are very angry. They don't understand how this happened. Who do we hold accountable? Well, the long and short of that is this all happened through process, public process.
Renee Gray is the Washington County manager. She says at the root of the issue is past accounting practices that failed to verify that the expenses matched the actual money in the budget accounts. She says that led commissioners to unknowingly spend down the county's reserve funds. The problems were discovered last year when the auditor worked on the 2021 audit and were linked to accounting deficiencies as far back as 2020.
We didn't know what to do. Basically, nobody knew what to do. And so this plan has come out from teamwork, from our delegates, from our commissioners, from our budget committee, from our department heads. Everybody has been all hands on deck with this, and that's what they're deciding.
The county has always borrowed money to fund operations since its budget starts in January, but tax bills aren't due until September. But this year, the county has no way to pay back the roughly $8 million it borrowed. That debt payment is due December 31st. If the county just doesn't pay the bill, Gray says it won't be able to get a loan for 2026 operations, and she expects the county would run out of money in February.
And so essentially the county could run out of cash to fund the payments that we have going out, including payroll, and people don't work for free.
But it can't just terminate operations. State law requires the county to offer certain services. So if the bond question is rejected, the money will have to be found somewhere. And the majority of the county's costs are for the sheriff's office, emergency dispatch, and the jail. Washington County has no other emergency dispatch center. The state police no longer patrol the county, and many towns don't have their own police departments.
It's a terrible combination of things. We knew this was going to be very, very painful.
Brian Schuth is the chair of the county's Budget Advisory Committee and Eastport City Manager.
It's ugly. We're not in a position really to comfortably be able to take that on. We don't have a lot of financial resiliency in this county, but we owe the money, and it's going to have to be paid.
He says the bond would allow the county to pay off the debt and continue to operate while giving towns the flexibility to pay it back over 10 years. Without it, the only option is to put the entire $8 million in the 2026 budget.
We understand people are very angry, and there's people who want to vote no just to punish the county. But you know, the county is us. It doesn't matter who you're mad at, you're punching yourself in the face.
Maine law does not allow counties to declare bankruptcy. State Senator Marianne Moore proposed a bill seeking a state bailout should the bond effort fail, but it was not accepted by the Legislative Council. Moore and others have reached out to the governor's office. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse. I'm joined by Maine Public's political correspondents Steve Missler and Kevin Miller. Today, we're talking about a wild week in the U.S. Senate race as breakout Democratic candidate Graham Plattner tries to navigate revelations about his social media history and also a tattoo often associated with Nazis. So, guys, Plattner was riding a lot of momentum up until Governor Janet Mills entered the race. But since then, there's been a barrage of news about past Reddit posts and, of course, the tattoo, which, Steve, his campaign actually proactively revealed. Do I have that right?
Yep. Give it a listen.
I've been told that some of your political opponents are telling reporters that that tattoo has a Nazi affiliation. And I would like to know, is that accurate? Are you a secret Nazi?
I am not a secret Nazi. Actually, if you read through my Reddit comments, I think you can pretty much figure out where I stand on Nazism and anti-Semitism and racism in general. I would say a lifelong opponent.
So what you just heard there was Plattner on the Pod Save America podcast, where he was asked about a skull and crossbones tattoo on his chest that resembles a Totenkopf, a symbol worn by some units in the Nazi SS. And the reason his campaign broke this news itself is because it was trying to get ahead of a story that was part of a barrage of opposition research designed to hobble his candidacy, or at the very least, blunt his momentum. So this was the campaign's way of trying to explain this tattoo on Plattner's terms. This happens from time to time in campaigns, but the way this occurred is certainly unorthodox, yet in some ways very fitting for this moment in politics.
All right, so let's hit pause on the tattoo controversy for a minute, because it seems like the timing of this disclosure is important. Kevin, this came on the heels of several news stories about Plattner's Reddit post dating back to 2009, but up through 2021. Those posts were deleted before he launched his campaign, but they were discovered by opposition researchers who then began leaking them to selected media outlets. Is that correct?
It all started with these posts on the online forum Reddit. And among his many, many posts, Plattner said many rural Americans are racist. He also criticized police officers. He said that black people are stingy tippers. Once this all started bubbling to the surface last week, Plattner said that he was in a pretty dark place back then after four combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was lonely and disillusioned, and that these Reddit communities were his outlet. But you know, now he says he's changed and he's in a much better place in his life. You know, he's more empathetic and he doesn't believe these things anymore.
Right. And then from what I saw on social media, it kind of looked like Plattner's explanation was pulling him out of this mess. Right. People seemed ready to look past it. But then the tattoo disclosure happened.
Yeah, a lot of people seemed to appreciate his willingness to open up about it. You know, he didn't run from the controversy. He was all over the place in the media talking about it. But then this tattoo issue just explodes in the media here in Maine and nationally. And Plattner once again kind of went back to this, he was young and stupid, or at least ignorant. He says he got the tattoo back in 2007. He said, you know, he and his fellow Marines were on leave in Croatia. There was apparently a lot of alcohol flowing at the time, and they ended up at a tattoo parlor.
And we chose a terrifying-looking skull and crossbones off the wall because we were Marines, and, you know, skulls and crossbones are a pretty standard military thing.
He says that he had no idea that that skull and crossbones design that he chose had any connections to the Nazis or to the SS.
And we should add here that Plattner has since had the tattoo covered up, right, Steve?
He did, and he made sure to show it to WGME, giving them a first look by taking off his shirt on camera. Not sure that's ever happened in a U.S. Senate race before.
All right, Steve, so the timing of all this is really interesting, right? We're talking about a primary election that's more than 8 months from now. Isn't this the kind of stuff that we'd normally see closer to the election?
Yeah, typically, but this is an extraordinary contest, Ari. So I think we've only mentioned Governor Mills a couple of times in this discussion, but all of this happened since she got into the race. Now, her campaign isn't publicly pushing this stuff, but the assumption is that it's coming from activists or political groups working on behalf of her candidacy. Remember that she was recruited by Democratic leaders in the Senate because they think she has the best chance to beat Senator Collins next year. The problem for those who share that view is that Plattner has just gathered so much momentum since launching his campaign in August that he could just run away with this thing before Mills or anyone else in the primary field can stop him.
And this seems like a good moment to discuss this new poll by the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Kevin, I know it's still, again, quite early, but that survey was pretty stunning.
Yeah, it was very eye-opening. The UNH poll shows Plattner with a massive lead among likely voters in the Democratic Party. 58% of respondents said that Plattner was their first choice, compared to 24% for Mills. So this is a total political newcomer who I think it's safe to say that almost no one in Maine outside of Hancock County knew who he was just 3 months ago. And he has more than double the support of Maine's two-term governor. And I think this speaks to the angst and the anger and the frustration on the left right now, but it also potentially explains why the national groups backing Mills, as Steve just talked about, and why they came out swinging so hard at Plattner.
And Kevin, how is all of this affecting Plattner's campaign? This week, he drew over 500 people to a town hall in Ogunquit. At the same time, there are reports of a major reshuffling of his campaign staff. Can he survive this?
Yeah, so that is the big question, right? The expectation is the groups that are digging into Plattner are not done. He's lost some campaign staff, but he's replaced them with some pretty seasoned veterans. So far, at least anecdotally, he seems to be holding his own among his supporters. And I think it's important, he hasn't lost some of the major backers, like Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. I think that would be a major sign of trouble if he did. But, you know, speaking of Sanders, I think it's interesting to note there that there seems like there's some risks here for the Democratic Party, too. If we go back to 2016, during the Democratic presidential primary and caucuses, a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters were absolutely infuriated at the way he was treated by the party. And many of them stayed home in November of 2016, and Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton. So I guess, you know, there's always a risk here that these attacks on Plattner could backfire on the Democratic Party.
Steve, what's your take on this?
Well, look, I think it really depends on the risk tolerance of Democratic primary voters. I mean, this is relatively new territory for them. And in some ways, it reminds me of what Republican voters experienced during the Tea Party movement of 2009 and 2010. There was a lot of anger in the GOP base back then, and that meant a lot of so-called establishment Republicans were upset in party primaries. Some of those insurgent candidates went on to win general elections. A lot of them didn't. And of course, there's no guarantee that Governor Mills will win an election against Senator Collins. But as long as Plattner is in the race, that will be a choice. Battle-tested, vetted governor, or charismatic firebrand with some baggage.
And that was Maine Public political correspondents Steve Missler and Kevin Miller. You can also read our Pulse newsletter. You can find a link to subscribe at mainepublic.org/pulse. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition with Jess Miller. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.